Are you co-parenting with your ex-spouse? I think that co-parenting with a narcissistic borderline person is one of the most difficult things that we could possibly do in this lifetime. You're stuck with them. You're stuck with not agreeing with them for the next 18 years, depending on the age of your children. And sometimes it's actually impossible to co-parent with your ex. They can be very divisive, and they can be very sneaky, and they can sabotage your relationship with your children and sabotage the time so that the children don't even like going there. And then they blame you for alienating your children because you aren't encouraging the kids who are being pulled out the door to go see mommy or daddy. It is a difficult thing, and sometimes it's really not possible. So today I have brought an expert in. Karen Covey is a lawyer in Chicago, and I've done a few videos with her, and I love her work. I love her blog. I love everything about her. Today we're going to talk about parallel parenting, because when you can't co-parent, parallel parenting is going to set you on to completely separate tracks, but it's going to empower you to have to deal with them less. And she's going to explain to us what that means and what it looks like and the legalities of it and all kinds of stuff like that. But I want you guys to know that there is another option, and it may or may not work for you, but it is something that you need to explore. If you're still fighting with your ex, parallel parenting is the way to go. My name is Tracy Malone. I am the founder of NarcissistAbuseSupport.com. So if you are looking for resources, please visit my website. But without any further ado, let's welcome Karen.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It is so much fun to have you back. I know that we have spoken so many times, and I love your work. And it always seems that if I Google something, I find you.
So, that happens.
It's a pretty good thing. You're doing a good job.
Thank you.
Your articles are amazing. And today we're going to talk about co-parenting with a narcissist, but in particular, parallel parenting with a narcissist. So my first question to you is really, let's talk about the difficulties in co-parenting with a narcissist, you know, and how that could look. And then we'll bring up the parallel parenting after that.
Yeah, well, co-parenting, the underlying premise of co-parenting is that you've got two parents who can work together for the benefit of the children, right? That's the, like, that's your baseline. But when you're trying to do that with a narcissist, it doesn't exist, right? Narcissists are all about me, me, me. So if, you know, when you're trying to fit the kids in and say, hey, you know, can we change the times a little bit because the kids are sick, or they stayed late at practice, or they, you know, you're trying to be flexible. You're trying to do what's right for your kids. For the narcissist, it's not about the kids. It's about them. So any kind of co-parenting becomes challenging.
Yeah. And when you've had a high conflict divorce, you probably know that this is going to be a high conflict co-parenting situation.
Absolutely.
And so that's where parallel parenting comes in. So describe the, what does parallel parenting mean? Because a lot of people don't know what that means.
Yeah. First of all, I guess just the lawyer in me wants to say that parallel parenting isn't a thing that you can ask for in court. You can't say, I want parallel parenting the same way that you want co-parenting. It's just sort of a version of co-parenting. But so what you need to do is say, okay, I'm going to be stuck co-parenting with my ex because we both have children together. How am I going to set up the rules so that we have the least amount of interaction possible? Because parallel parenting means you're going on parallel tracks, right? You're not really working together for the benefit of the kids, although in a perfect world you would be. But if that's not possible, you're going to parent your children your way when they're with you. Your ex is going to co-parent the children, or parent them, you know, his or her way when they're with him or her, and that's the way you're going to go. So it's about setting up your co-parenting relationship so that you're on parallel tracks. That means you don't communicate as much as you otherwise would. That means you limit your interaction, and you each raise your kids your way, and you kind of, the hard thing about parallel parenting is that if your ex isn't raising the kids in a way that you think is appropriate, unless it's dangerous or crosses a line, you kind of got to just bite your tongue and say, okay, well, that's, you know, in mom's house, we have these rules, in dad's house, we have these rules, and that's what you end up with. So that's kind of what parallel parenting is in a nutshell and how it's different from co-parenting.
Okay, and when we do that, isn't a strong parenting plan sort of like a blueprint for it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you, first of all, in any kind of co-parenting with a narcissist, you absolutely need a strong parenting plan. You've got to, and here's the dilemma, because negotiating all these little details with a narcissist is going to, like, you want to make, your head feels like it's going to explode. You're making yourself crazy. You don't want to do it. But if you don't do it, your life afterwards is 1,000 times worse. You cannot have loopholes. Everything has got to be written down to a T, and you've got to follow it exactly the way, you know, you've got it laid out as much as is humanly possible. So having a strong parenting plan, which, by the way, is going to mean 20 or 30 pages, right? Oh, yeah. No, these things are not like a 3-page, a 5-page parenting plan. You might be able to get away with that if you and your ex are cooperative and you're friendly and you agree and you can work together. But if you can't, you've got to lay things out. You've got to lay out scheduling and parenting issues and what's okay and what's not okay. And you get into a level of detail that's really kind of crazy making, but it's crazy making when you're doing it. But then once you've got it on paper, you're done with it and you've got your blueprint or your guidelines written down and you can follow those. If you don't have them written down, that's when things get really nuts after your divorce.
Yeah. I've had people who had a fair parenting plan written out, say, you know, dad's going to pay for half of college, you're going to pay for half of college. But there were no guidelines as far as where that college would be. So dad wants him to go to a community college and mom, you know, the kid got into Brown and the kid wants to go to Brown. And so every single detail of, you know, the tier of the level or the cost, you know, we'll each pay half if it's up to X much money. You know, otherwise, if the supervising main parent says, no, we're going to Brown and you're on the hook for $60,000 a year, you know, all of these details are so important because this is where later on it's going to come back and you're like, no, he's supposed to pay for half. Well, you didn't say where, you didn't say how much, and now you're going to fight over it and your kid could end up losing their spot at Brown, right? So I think it's so important. I'm going to hold up a book here that is Parenting Plans for Families After Divorce. And this woman has written a lot of details in there of things that you should be considering, things that you should be planning out, and things not to forget. Because if we don't make this attempt at being as solid as it can, it's worthless, because they will walk all over you and the kids are the ones that are going to suffer.
Right. I mean, even with a solid parenting plan, this isn't going to be easy, but without it, it's going to be completely crazy. And what will end up happening is you go back to court to fight about all of the things that you didn't put in the parenting plan in the first place. So I know it seems like overkill, it seems crazy, but when you're dealing with somebody who's really a narcissist or in a marriage or divorce that's truly high conflict, the more I's you can dot and T's you can cross in your parenting plan at the front end, the easier your life will be on the back end. And it really does come down to that.
And it also, I know financial, you know, oh no, we've got to make a 30-page parenting plan. Guess what? If you go back to court after this is all done,
yeah,
up in the millions of thousands in a second anyway. So take the time, make it ironclad, and it is your armor and your protection for the children.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
I was hoping you could share a quick story with us of just how is it that somebody can get to a point. And how do they know this is, oh gosh, this isn't working, this co-parenting thing isn't working, and how do you get them to agree? So do you have like an example of a story or someone that's, you know, how do they get that far?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of like red flags I would say. The first one is, if you are still fighting in court, if you've had a high conflict divorce and it's like a month or two after your divorce and you're back fighting in court again, you've got a high you've got a high conflict divorce, you've got a high conflict co-parenting relationship, parallel parenting is going to be the best for you. Like, you just know that going out of the box. But I remember one time years ago, I represented a client who, I don't know the clinical diagnosis of the father of her child. They were never married, but he was clearly, he had strong narcissistic tendencies, among other things. He had a lot of issues. And the good thing was, she kind of figured that out on the front end. So she did try to make as ironclad of a parenting plan as she could, but it got crazy. I mean, they were back in court on and off for a good 50% of this poor kid's childhood. Mm. And what would happen is that, you know, she would say, I want my child to be enrolled in this activity. Or the kid would say, hey, mom, I really want to do X, whatever X was, right? Do you know how hard it is to find any activity on the planet that only has practices and games and events on your parenting time? You know, so there was always some back and forth and give and take, and she ended up having to, you know, really twist herself into a pretzel sometimes to try to make life as normal as possible for her kid. Thankfully, the child is now 18 and graduated out of all of this nonsense. But it's crazy. So she had the foresight to write things down very specifically, because she knew if they're in writing, he will follow them. If they're not in writing, forget about it. It's not happening. And they still, even with that, they were back and forth. I'm not kidding you when I would say fully 50% of this kid's childhood, we were negotiating something. Sometimes we could keep them out of court, negotiate out of court. Sometimes we ended up back in court, but it was almost always something. Meanwhile, he went through lawyer after lawyer after lawyer after lawyer. I stayed with her for the duration. And because she was really doing her best to try to make things work, and it's hard. It was just really tough.
And that's one of the things that I think you made a really good point. My ears perked up when you said, little Sally has activities every Saturday, practices or games or whatever it is. In that parenting plan, you could have that the non-supervisor parent has to take them to whatever activities there are, because in very many ways, the non-custodial parent can end up thinking it's their time, it's Disney dad, it's Disney mom, and I don't have to do what that is, but that's only hurting the child. And that anger that now the kid is never going to make the soccer team, she's right, never going to have the friends because she's got to miss 50% of the practices and she's going to be off any team. So you're really hurting the kid. So working those things out, putting those things into the parenting plan is going to make, you know, parallel parenting or co-parenting work so much better. If you don't have that written, they're not a rule and they don't have to follow them. And who gets hurt in this? Yep. It's your child.
Yeah. So you need to set things out like, okay, what activities can the kid be in? Who decides what activities, if a decision is made, however it gets made, but if a decision is made that the child's going to participate in baseball, soccer, you know, gymnastics, whatever it is, that both parents shall take the child to every game and rehearsal, no matter whose parenting time it's on, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, yes, you don't want to overcommit your child and have them in 15 different things just to avoid parenting time with your ex. That's not going to work either. But you want some balance. The bottom line is that when you're dealing with a really, really high conflict co-parent, you've got to write things in. You've got to think ahead to things that you'd normally never would have, they wouldn't occur to you that you would have to say to a parent who loves their child, but you do. Yeah. You just do.
It's so sad. I hear the stories. It breaks my heart. And I think of the people that are divorcing one, the people that are got a mother and, you know, the co-parenting people are the hardest because you are stuck with them and they tend to try to make people's lives as miserable as possible. And that puts the kids in the middle.
Well, yeah, and you see that you're hurting your child. That's the hard part. And the spouse that, or the co-parent who has got the mental health issue, knows that you love your child, knows that that's the way to get to you. And so it breaks your heart. And the parent who's more mentally healthy is the one who ends up making concessions. Like in the circumstance where I was just talking about, I mean, what would happen was the woman would have to give away more of her time or give away things that were really important to her just so she could negotiate that the kid got to go to the soccer games or, you know, participate in the activities or do the things. And it wasn't about right. It wasn't about fair. It was about she was trying to do the best for her kid, even though it was at her own personal cost. Right. And it sucked. But when the kid got old enough, like, children are not stupid. Mm-hmm. They get it. They figure it out. And, you know, in the long run, I think the child was way better off for it. And that mom and child had a really good relationship. Mm-hmm. But it was a rough road to hoe, I got to tell you.
I can only imagine, not to mention expensive. You know,
oh, yeah.
Make that really clear, people, going back to court is not cheap. We don't want to mess with that. What I would love to hear from you now is some tips, how to help the kids, how to build this case, how to document. What kind of tips do you have for people that might be in this situation?
First of all, document everything. I mean, whenever you get into a he said, she said, it's hard in court to know who's telling the truth. It takes a long time and a lot of history in order for the judge to know, oh yeah, I should take what this person says with a grain of salt. Meanwhile, you've spent tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, to get to that point. You don't want to do that. Document. And so, you know, take pictures, put timestamps or date stamps if that's important. Make sure you keep copies of everything. When your kids are 18, you can throw it out. Until then, keep copies of every single thing. Document, document, document. The next tip is to limit the amount of interaction you have with your co-parent, right? Remember, parallel parenting, and the best way to do that is with a co-parenting app. You can use Our Family Wizard, or there's a whole host of other co-parenting apps now that range in price from free to, I think, maybe $150 a year, which is not a lot of money compared to what you're going to spend in court. And these apps allow you to communicate. Once somebody writes something in an email and sends it to the other person, it can never be erased. So there's no more he said, she said. It's all right there. And they've got third-party capabilities so that you can just, you know, let the judge or your lawyer have a password. They create an account and they get in and they can see. You don't have to send them stuff. They can go into the app and they can see what's been going on, right? It keeps schedules. It keeps expenses. A lot of them keep expenses. So they have a lot of functionality and it's only growing in time. That will help you limit your interaction with your ex as much as possible. So you're going on, again, those parallel tracks instead of having to interact together, because that's what causes you the most problems. So that's a huge tip right there. Just use the co-parenting apps. Don't, and for heaven's sakes, limit face-to-face conversations, because that's where you end up with confrontations instead of conversations.
Right, right. And then there's the famous fifth book.
Yes, I have my copy right here.
Isn't that cool that we both have them? So BIF is a book written by Bill Eddy, who, those of you who have not read it, is brief, informative, friendly, and firm. And that's how you are supposed to keep the conversations so that you're not explaining things. A lot of people will when they're, you know, going interacting with their ex, will be like, but I want him to know why, or I want her to see my side. Doesn't work. It only gives them more, you know, stuff to use against you later. So keeping it brief is really important.
It's super important because you want your communication to be effective, and you have to understand, like, you're trying to explain yourself, you're trying to justify what you do or show them that you're trying to be fair. Here's the deal. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They don't care. It doesn't matter. And you are never going to convince them that your side has merit. So don't try. just keep your, you know, and it helps to practice the BIF conversations because it's not an intuitive way for most people to talk, right? So start, again, by putting everything in writing, which is another reason that the co-parenting app is helpful. You're not talking on the phone to your ex or your co-parent, right? You're putting it in writing. What does that do? It gives you the opportunity to look at what you've written and said, oh, maybe I said too much. Maybe I got a little diggy in there when, yeah, I really don't need to do that. And you can edit yourself before you hit send. And that's another tip I have for people. It's like, as much as possible, do not respond in the heat of the moment. Give yourself time to edit, to think about it, to calm down before you respond. Unless something is truly an emergency, don't respond for 24 hours. Even if, you know, your other co-parent is then going crazy. How come you don't care, you didn't say anything, you didn't respond. Well, you must agree with me. Let them say whatever it is they want. Take your time to craft a response that's very thoughtful, that's brief, informative, friendly, and firm. And in the long run, you're not going to get the emotional satisfaction out of that, but you're going to get a whole lot less grief and aggravation. And kind of on balance, that's worth it.
Yeah, and I think a really important thing for people to understand is even communicating in one of those apps, you know, your ex is potentially going to say things that trigger you. You know, it could be unintentional. It could be just because they know you so well. They're gonna throw that stuff in, and you know, feeding the anger, waiting that 24 hours is so much healthier for you to just walk away from it. You know, if they're trying to get things changed, keep track of that. Put it into that spreadsheet. Keep that spreadsheet as emotionless as you possibly can, because the judge isn't gonna want to see you writing, well, then he said this, and then he said that, and she did this. Nobody cares. It's they missed an appointment. They changed their stand. They were looking for this. It's just the facts, ma'am. And when you can remove the anger that you might get in an email and not spit it back at them, you're the one that's healthier. If you hold on to the anger and you respond and you're like, you're just going to start a little war. So remove it. And think to yourself, I used to have these little things I'd say like, oh, there they go again, dumbass. You know, just like let yourself just go. Of course you're expecting it. If you expect it and you know it's just typical behavior, it has no power over you. So to just sort of let go and go, yeah, there he goes again. There she does. She's doing it again. Put it on the spreadsheet. If you don't put this stuff onto your, you know, documentation and stuff like that, if you're not writing it out on that spreadsheet, what can happen is you reach a point where this is the 100th time that they've missed picking up the kids. And now you're going to start to document it. The judge is only going to see that last one, not the last 100. If you can prove and show and have, here's the email where they canceled seeing, here's where they didn't do this. Now you've got a paper trail, and that's why it's so advantage. But it's taking out that anger, taking out that emotion that they're going to trigger you with.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing that a lot of people don't realize or don't think about is that in addition to making your life easier and your kids' life easier in the moment, also teaching your child how to cope with this, because like it or not, your child is going to have that person as a parent for the rest of their life. So teaching them healthy coping skills and ways to deal with this behavior that doesn't, you know, that doesn't cause it to be even worse emotionally is going to be a super, super important skill for them. So that's a good thing on that level, not just on the day-to-day level of it helps you in the moment as well.
Right, right. And teaching the kids how to trust their instincts, understand boundaries. Yep. You know, kids can set boundaries. And while the narcissistic parent might not honor them, it's empowering the kid to have spoken up versus taking it and going back into a little ball and dealing with stress for the rest of their life. So
right.
Teaching them to empower them with boundaries, listen to their intuition and trust their self is going to be huge for them.
Absolutely. And, you know, parenting your child to the best of your ability with empathy and respect and trying to empower them, as you said, is going to give them what they need to grow into healthy adults, right? Don't forget they're dealing with one parent who's not healthy. So they're going to need, you know, you kind of got to do makeup duty for what they're not getting from somebody else. And the more you can do that, the better your kids are going to be long term. And that's what that's what everybody wants in the long run is happy, healthy kids.
And I know that you wrote something about knowing that you might take the brunt of the kids like acting out because you're the happy, healthy house and they're afraid to do that in the other house. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, when you're the one who is okay and together and loving the kids and accepting the kids, as a parent, you're trying to provide them with a safe environment. Well, it's also safe then for them to act out. I mean, you know how frustrating it is to deal with their other parent, right? It's just as frustrating for them. So after they've had some time for, you know, time away, you know, visitation time, parenting time, whatever you want to call it, and they've been interacting with that parent and they haven't been getting their needs met and they haven't been heard and they're frustrated and then they come to your house, it's okay for them to just, you know, to throw a tantrum or do a word vomit on you or to act out or to be bad because, you know, and your initial reaction is, how come I've got to deal with all of this? This sucks. This isn't about me. This is about their other parent, blah, 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 blah. If you reframe the way you're thinking about it to say, hey, my kid feels safe enough with me to act out, okay, I can hold that acting out behavior and I can get them through this because they have to have some kind of an outlet for their emotions. And it sucks that you're it, but if you can do that for them, what a gift you're giving your children, really.
It's so important because they do come back and everybody always talks about the deprogramming after being at the other parent's house. You know, my son used to come home and he would be like 3 days before we got him back. You know, it'd be like, he'd just be, and it was just, we had to sort of, we would call it like the deprogramming days, you know, it would just be, let him get back to normal and not be as stressed. And I don't know what happened there and we never need to know what happens there. So make sure that you all don't ask your children, what'd you do with daddies and things like that. These are putting too much burden on the kids, so just don't do that. But because we didn't know why, but at the same time, we gave him that space, made it safe, and he's now a 25-year-old happy boy. So, you know, it is part of the deal. It is, there's going to be a deprogramming. There's going to be that hot when they get back. They might be angry at you. You might do things differently. Maybe you don't let them stay up all night and that's going to piss them off. You go back to your original rules, your house, your rules, and do it for the kids because someone has to give them some grounding and a sense of support that they're loved. And no matter what they do, if they come home, you know, story barfing, whatever it was, let them have that time.
And absolutely, you brought up another really, really important point. When you're making your parenting plan, obviously you want the amount of time the kids spend to be age appropriate, but you need to think about putting in deprogramming time. Like if you've got a schedule where every second day your children are going from house to house to house, that is going to be extremely difficult for them to deal with, right? They need a solid chunk of time in your house to kind of decompress and get over it and get normal and get grounded. Okay, now we're going for the next bit of time at the other parent's house. If you've got them bouncing around like a ping pong ball, they never get that time. So think about that when you're making your schedule.
Yeah. Some of the worst things I have heard is when they go off to the other parent's house, they're limited as to how many sheets of toilet paper they can use.
That's like, extreme.
They're allowed to have 2 for pee and 3 for poop. That's it. I was like, are you kidding me? But the kids have learned and that's how they have to deal with life. And she can't control that. So these things happen. But is there anything you want to do to sum it up and just give us one last juicy nugget?
One last juicy nugget. I think we've covered a whole lot, but it's if I could say one thing, it would be to be realistic about your situation and do the best you can to set it up on the front end so that if you have to parallel parent, you parallel parent. And, you know, don't, you can say why me or that sucks or whatever and feel sorry for yourself. It's not going to help, right? Do what you need to do to get through it. And, you know, and then afterwards, you and your kids are going to be better off because of it. So it's about trying to do as much as you can to set things up correctly on the front end. I know it's exhausting. You're going to want to give up. You're going to want to say, screw it. I don't care about that. Doesn't matter. We won't deal with it. Yeah, deal with it.
Yeah.
Just deal with it.
Don't know. They will take every opportunity and every single loophole that they possibly can. And to them, contempt of court means very little. I went to a contempt of court hearing with somebody last Monday, and 2 years he's been in contempt of court, and it was fascinating to watch. But you don't want to go there. You don't want to spend another 10 grand on a contempt of court thing. So map it out. Let it be there. Let it all get in writing, and then you've got some leverage. If you do have to bring it back, now he's actually in contempt of not doing something he was or she was supposed to do, right? So plan it out, lay it out before this happens, and if Log's out there. She's also got some divorce courses and all kinds of juicy nuggets on her website. So we will have the link down below, KarenCovey.com, and we will send people your direction if they need some help and guidance.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I hope you guys found that interesting as I did. I love talking with her because she's brilliant and she really knows her stuff. And this is an area that is so sensitive to people who are going through it. When you're trying to co-parent and things just aren't working out, it is so frustrating. So I wanted to introduce you to the idea of parallel parenting. If you are looking for additional support, please visit my website, narcissistabusesupport.com. If you're looking for some coaching, I am here to help you. I help people from all over the world, whether it's your co-parenting, your divorcing, whatever it is, I can talk you through it. I can get you to the resources and get you the tools to help you make it through whatever stage you're in. So thank you so much for watching. Please subscribe. And if you're listening to this on a podcast, you can also watch me on YouTube and vice versa. So have a great day, everyone, and I look forward to seeing you soon.